You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. And Andy, we have some serious business to get down to here as we run through another division in our division preview series. This is the AFC South. And when I look at the AFC South, I see three teams that you could be very excited about this year.
I would agree with that. And I think everybody would understand which of those three teams we're talking about, and we're not taking a shot at the other team, are we?
A little bit. They're kind of an also ran in the division,
but this is more about a positive statement of those three teams rather than a backhanded negative statement about that fourth team, which, by the way, was in the AFC Championship not long ago and nobody saw that coming. So it's not like It's not like they have no shot at all.
If you are combing through the league looking for those, like, okay, who's going to be the Super Bowl dark horse this year? Who's going to come out of nowhere and make a run? I think these are three of your top candidates.
I wouldn't say Tennessee would be coming out of nowhere because they were a game away from it last year.
True.
But I catch your drift. I agree with it. And I think we will both agree with which one of these three teams we are talking about the most in that statement.
All right, well, let's get to it here. We will give our projections at the end of the show, as we always do, but we will continue our practice of going order of last year's standings. So that's what you're going to hear first. That's the order we're going to do it in. If you want to jump around, if you're a fan of the Colts, you got to wait a little bit later in the show, but that's okay. You can listen to it now. You can bounce back. You can, I don't know, do whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life here, but let's start with the defending division champion, Houston Texans. Now, Andy, obviously the big move here was trading DeAndre Hopkins, and you know, we talked about that. The return wasn't very good, but that said, I'll give you a stat here to start, and please do not take this as a take that Will Fuller is actually better than DeAndre Hopkins. He is not, but Will Fuller kind of seems to have an outsize value to this offense. When you look at the basic statistical production, 40 starts for Deshaun Watson in his career, 23 with Fuller in the lineup. And this, by the way, is including games that he left halfway through. If I dove even deeper, this would probably be even better. But with Fuller in the lineup, 28.3 points per game, 8.6 yards per attempt. In the 17 games Fuller has missed, 22.6 points per game, so almost a 6-point drop, and 7.2 yards per attempt. It's just been a bit of a different offense here when they don't have Fuller. So they move on from Hopkins. Now you got Fuller. They brought in Brandon Cooks. They brought in Randall Cobb. In Cooks and in Fuller, you have a couple of big play threats now. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Sort of trading the security blanket type guy for the two big play guys. How do you think that works out in this offense?
It has pluses and minuses, of course. I think the minus, real quick, is I know with Cooks especially, I don't know if it's the same with Fuller as much, but I don't think Cooks is a great intermediate receiver. I think he's okay. He can be fine at that, but he's not consistent enough there for you to say that's his game. We can count on that week in and week out. He's certainly not. DeAndre Hopkins is at the highest of levels in that sense, catching contested balls, 12-yard range downfield, plus or minus. You know, that's not Cooks' game. Cooks is more vertical. He's a space player. He needs time in his route to create the space at times. And Fuller's probably more of a straight-line speedster in a similar makeup to Cooks. So then the discussion is, does having two blazing speed guys, guys that really take the top off the defense, does that offset the lack of an intermediate weapon? And that gets into the nature of your passing game and some of your designs. I know this, Gary. Deshaun Watson, and he doesn't get talked about in this sense because I think we get mesmerized a little bit by the mobility. We get mesmerized by some of the playmaking flair. But he's got that Carson Wentz gene a little bit where he's going to let it loose and stretch the field, and he's going to think vertical before he thinks accuracy or numbers or easy completion. He's an aggressive quarterback. And that's what Houston likes about him. They especially liked it early in his career because I think they felt Brock Osweiler did not give him that enough, and they wanted a guy that would open up their offense, and here comes an alpha male like Watson, and he has. So he might be one of those receivers who needs to have, or one of those quarterbacks who needs to have speed around him just because of how aggressive he is. I don't know if you need two speedsters. You'll take it, but at what cost? But I think that's why they're better, or they're statistically more accomplished with Fuller in the lineup. Fuller fits the way Watson wants to play. Watson wants to air it out.
Yeah, it's look, I still really like Kenny Stills. I think Kenny Stills is a number two caliber receiver pretty much anywhere in the league, and they're going to have him as a three or maybe a four if you're really bullish on Randall Cobb. I mean,
well, and I don't mean to interrupt you. What's interesting about Stills, though, he's also a vertical receiver. He's not as fast as these guys, but I thought in Miami his best work when he was a Dolphin came when he was running vertical routes out of the slot. So in my mind, Stills is a third vertical weapon. You can do more with Stills, and he's a good all-around player, and he understands the details. So maybe they feel he's that intermediate weapon. But you're right, Randall Cobb in the mix as well. I'm a little surprised that all these guys are still here. When Cobb and Cooks came along, I thought maybe that might be curtains for Stills.
Yeah, well, what they have here coming out of the backfield is kind of interesting. David Johnson, who obviously is not quite what he once was in Arizona, but is still an accomplished pass catcher, and Duke Johnson, also a very good receiving back. And again, they don't have anyone to replace DeAndre Hopkins, but can you sort of, I don't know, make this work kind of like in the style of a Bruce Arians offense where, if you can't get vertical, you're coming down to the backs and you do it that way.
Yes, you can do that. And I think they'll use those backs in more than just checkdowns. And I know you're not implying that that's all they would do. Of course, they'll use those guys in a lot of ways. I think the Texans led the league in empty formations last year. They spread out, they shift, they go to empty. Your back becomes a wide receiver when you go to empty. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Johnson and the other Giants, both Johnsons, Duke and David Johnson, on the field together at times. Who's going to run the ball, though, Gary? And somebody has to still give you a foundational run game. And David Johnson, quite frankly, was not remotely close to. He was as bad on film as his numbers were on paper. I think Duke Johnson's the better runner of the two. Now, unless they feel that for whatever reason they'll get the old David Johnson, then that solves it right there. But at some point, they're probably going to become reliant on Watson and the threat of his mobility in the running game. And maybe that's fine. Maybe that's part of the reason you had Deshaun Watson.
Maybe 12 jet sweeps for Brandon Cooks every week. Yeah, it's. I mean, look, not to harp on that trade again, but David Johnson was a guy the Cardinals were trying to give away and couldn't, and the fact that the Texans took him on, I guess, leads you to believe that they think more highly of him than most people do at this point. So maybe, I mean, look, maybe they see something in him that we just don't, that really didn't show up in the film the last year or two here. So.
Well, and maybe it's about Hopkins as well. We all agree Hopkins is a sensational player. And to me, he's one of the most interesting receivers because I've said for a while, when you watch his attributes, he's not very fast. He's not quick. He's not necessarily big. He plays big, but he's not a big man by receiver's plus size, but he's not Julio Jones. And he's not overly refined either. He's not Michael Thomas, certainly. So – how in the world does this guy get 100 catches every year? And some of it's volume, but the volume's there because quarterbacks are willing to throw to Hopkins when he's covered, because Hopkins might be the best contested catch guy of the NFL right now, maybe of this era even. And, you know, that's what Hopkins is. I don't know if every team would value a guy like that quite the same way. He's a true number one receiver, but not every system's going to ask that of him. Houston kind of does, because the other thing about Watson is he's not really stylistically, he's not the most anticipatory passer. I think he's more of a playmaker than anticipation passer. And so he's comfortable throwing to covered guys. And he certainly can play on schedule at times, but he is not dependent on going on schedule. And Hopkins was probably a very comfortable security blanket for him, because I think their styles fit each other pretty well. So they don't really have that guy on the roster now. They don't have a contested catch guy out here for Watson. No. And what does that do? Does Watson have to now play a little bit differently? And then if he does, if that's the case, there are some things he's going to have to work on and add to his game.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting offense here. And again, I didn't have a big problem with trading DeAndre Hopkins. They just got such an underwhelming return for him. Hopkins did want more money, and they had allocated that money elsewhere on the roster, which, you know, those are the decisions that they made. And they couldn't they were going to cut bait with a Laremy Tunsil or something like that. So I don't know.
Yeah, but do you think they called everybody about Hopkins around the... How many teams do you think were aware that Hopkins was available? I always assumed the whole league would know, but it probably doesn't quite work that way. My guess is the market for Hopkins was not as robust as people would think.
Yeah.
Because of what we just said, he's not... Even though he's a true number one, he's not a perfect fit in every system, and therefore... He's probably not worth the price tag. Are you willing to pay a premium for a guy who's not a perfect fit in your system? Especially when there's all these great receivers coming into the league the last couple of years via the draft, it wouldn't shock me if they found that the market for Hopkins was less robust than they anticipated, and maybe they felt they had to trade. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes. The sense you get is that Hopkins and Bill O'Brien didn't necessarily see eye to eye very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that case, if they felt they had to trade Hopkins, and I don't know if they did, but if they did, and the market's not as robust for him, you know, then desperation can set in at times, and then you have to take the deal that's available to you.
It's a good point with the influx of receivers coming in, especially this year's draft class, and next year's draft class is projected to be very strong as well. That did hurt the market, and honestly, you look at what happened in Cleveland last year with Odell Beckham Jr. Not that, you know, we're writing off the Browns and it'll never work with Beckham there, but, you know, they thought they were getting this instant impact transformational receiver, and it just didn't work out that way. I mean, it wasn't all Beckham's fault. They had plenty of issues out there in Cleveland, but, you know, receivers are directly dependent on quarterbacks getting them the ball, and I don't know, if you are going to bring in a veteran guy who you're going to have to pay draft capital for and obviously a high price tag for, big contract for, you want to make sure that guy can sort of do what he wants to do without having to depend on what's going to go on around him. Does that make sense?
Yes, that does make sense. Every receiver is going to be dependent on someone, though. I mean, in fact, the offense that's closest to maybe receivers not being as dependent on the QB is the one that Hopkins is joining in Arizona, because of the nature of it. And even that one, I think everyone agrees, that offense, even that one, will go only as far as Kyler Murray takes him.
All right, well, let's talk about the defense here for a little bit in Houston. This is actually the only other stat I have on this show. I only brought two stats with me, and they're both Texans stats. Texans last year allowed a league-high 38.7% conversion rate on third and long. That's 7 yards or longer, third and seven plus, 38.7% conversion rate. That was not only the worst in the league last year, that was actually the worst in the league since 2007 when the Lions allowed just under 40%. So, I mean, look, they had problems on the back end. It probably had a lot to do with what was going on up front with J.J. Watt out. But it's really tough to figure out how this they've loaded up on a lot of like ex first round picks. They've collected guys. They're given some second chances here. Vernon Hargreaves, a Garion Conley. I don't know. What do you make of this defense at this point, Andy? Because you know, up front, yeah, Clowney's gone. They still have Watt. They still have Whitney Mercilus. I mean, can they get back to being, you know, they were pretty good a couple years ago under Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, they were. What happened last year is very simple. Their pass rush just did nothing. Nobody talked about it for whatever reason. And it, when Watt was out of the lineup, that was it for them. I thought their best pass rusher was probably Jacob Martin last year when Watt was out of the lineup. And Jacob Martin is kind of a journeyman backup guy. He was not a journeyman, but he was a backup in Seattle for a few years. You know, he's not a headlining pass rusher. Whitney Mercilus he's a fine player as well, but he's a scheme pass rusher guy. You want to be a highly schemed pass rusher with him. And I don't think they're as schemed as they were a few years ago when Vrabel's here. And by the way, if you look at Tennessee's probably the most schemed pass rusher in the league. They do a lot with stunts and twists, different alignments dictating matchups. So Vrabel going over to the Titans maybe has something to do with the way this defense has performed. I think they're probably more confident in their secondary than people on the outside would be, for the simple reason that they played a ton of man coverage last year. They're the first team I've seen, Gary, that played, by the end of the year, they were playing man coverage predominantly, even on first and second down, which is exceedingly rare. Man coverage is typically a passing down or a third and short down situation. That's a passing down as well. Most teams play zone on first and second down because it's more conducive to honoring your run defense responsibilities. Man-to-man, you can really be manipulated in the run game because if you follow your man one way and the run goes the other way, you're not going to make the tackle as a defender. But Houston played man-to-man a lot last year. They didn't blitz very much either. Most teams that play a ton of man-to-man do so because they want to blitz. Houston, they'll rush five, but at times, which is, it's a form of blitzing, but they were not a high-volume come-after-you pass rush. They play man-to-man and keep two help defenders back, usually one deep and one in the middle of the field.
All right, let's
shallow middle of the field.
Yes, let's go on to Tennessee because we just talked about Mike Vrabel and that's where he is now. And as you mentioned, very schemed pass rush here. Jarrell Casey is gone. Jeffrey Simmons, who was a probable top five pick, certainly would have gone even higher in the first round had he not been hurt in the pre-draft process back in the 2019 draft. They'll have him full go this year, and they bring in Vic Beasley, who has a little slow going here early in camp, arrived late, and apparently having some health issues. But basically, Casey out, Beasley and Simmons in. They were, I think they disappointed a little bit in the pass rush last year. I thought they'd be more disruptive than they were. Does this, especially a unique pass rusher like Beasley, does this make sense? Does this get something more out of their pass rush here?
I don't know if Beasley in and of himself will change the dynamic of the pass rush and make them a lot better. I do think he fits the way they want to play, and therefore Beasley, now that he's decided to show up and communicate with these guys, he's in a good opportunity to maybe rejuvenate his career. What Beasley does well, he just needs a lot of space in order to get to the QB. He is very fast, and there's a nimbleness and an agility to him. He just doesn't have that short area movement necessarily. He needs room to build up speed. He needs room to cover a lot of ground when he makes his moves. And Houston's scheme will afford him that, Tennessee's scheme. Tennessee will let Beasley come off the edge at times, just straight up rushing the passer. But more than that, when they do scheme the rush, and Beasley was effective at times on schemed rushes where he's looping around as a stunter on a designed rush in Atlanta, he was fine at that. Their stunts usually cover more ground than other team stunts. A lot of teams, if you're in the C gap, you're going to stunt into the B gap, and that's the way it goes. With Tennessee, a lot of times if you're in the C gap, you'll stunt to the A gap. I mean, you'll cover a lot. It's a slower developing stunt, but it has a fast ending because guys come around with more built-up speed, and it's harder for blockers to spot them. I think Beasley fits that style of play well, so he has a chance to really succeed. It's the best situation he probably could have signed with. But I don't know if he'll change a pass rush in and of himself. The guy who I think can do that, and he didn't play a lot in their passing situations last year. He played more and more in run defense situations as the season went along, but it's the first guy you mentioned, Jeffrey Simmons. I didn't realize he was a top five caliber prospect. I knew he was a first round talent. He was first round pick. I thought Simmons looked phenomenal last year, and I would imagine that's maybe even the only reason why they chose not to pay and keep Jarrell Casey around. They just know Simmons is going to get those snaps.
Yeah, he's a potential difference maker. If it weren't for that torn ACL in the pre-draft process, he, again, top five caliber, I don't know exactly where he would have gone. But let's talk about the offense real quick. Ryan Tannehill. We saw a quarterback market that never really took off this year. The Titans did pay Tannehill. For all intents and purposes, it's a 2-year deal, and then they can make it as long or as short as they want after that. But they did commit to him. He was so good off play action last year, so good at that deep intermediate level throwing. He certainly has an AJ Brown, a guy who really fits this system. Is there any reason to look at this and kind of say, well, this is due to drop off. He can't play this well, or is this just the right guy and the right fit here, and it's going to keep going?
I think you have to fall on the side of assumption of it being the right guy and the right fit, because when you put on the film, Tannehill's numbers were legit last season. He was not. I know they had a lot of catch and run yards, and AJ Brown's an excellent playmaker post snap, and Jonnu Smith can do that at times. It was more Garoppolo-esque, though, where it's precision accuracy is helping create some of those run after catch yards. Or Aaron Rodgers always had a lot of run after catch in the early parts of his career. A quarterback playing right on schedule, right on time is creating the run after catch opportunities. And I thought Tannehill was one of those guys. And the part that Tannehill gets overlooked for is his arm's above average. I mean that in a good way. I don't mean that like, oh, it's not good, it's above average. I mean, he's got a better arm than a typical NFL QB. And there are times where you see him thread the needle. And when he's playing with confidence, that arm's on full display. He didn't always play with confidence in Miami for a number of different reasons. In Tennessee, he's played with tremendous confidence. It's a great commentary on Pat O'Hara, their QB coach, and then on the guy who I think's the most underrated coach in the NFL right now, and Arthur Smith, their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, kind of wild, the rise of Arthur Smith, who no one really noticed until, like, I don't know, December last year. I mean, you noticed him, but the casual fan probably, he was just there forever as a tight ends coach. And then all of a sudden, this offense took off in a unique way. And it was kind of like, oh, Arthur Smith, who is that?
Well, he is great at calling plays that are built off of previously called plays. He'll call something, then 4 or 5 snaps later, he'll call the perfect complement to what he just called. And there was just such a rhythm to it. He just has so far, how quarterbacks and people see him on film for a while, they maybe become better defending him. I don't know if that's true with coordinators or play callers, but right now it looks like Arthur Smith just has a natural feel and a great deep understanding of how to call plays in the NFL. I thought it was as good a job as I've seen from any play caller in recent years.
Let's go to the Colts. The Super Bowl bound Indianapolis Colts, as far as I'm concerned. Well, maybe the Chiefs are, but the Colts are very good as well. I really like the Colts. I want to start on the defensive side of the ball here. DeForest Buckner is the big addition here. It's still a team that doesn't have, super edge rushers here. Justin Houston had some moments last year. Kamoko Ture, maybe you can get a little bit excited about him, but Buckner is kind of he's the star on the defensive line at this point. And it is a defense that did struggle down the stretch last year. And I just want to, what's your feel? How much of a game changer is Buckner in this defense?
A big one. And what the other day was he was saying something like I'm tired of being underappreciated. So what was it he said the other day?
I don't know. He didn't
text. He didn't say it to you?
To say it, yeah.
He was, he was basically not enough people know me, and he was not being arrogant about it. I do not know him, but I did spend a morning with him once on a long interview, and he's one of the best people I've ever met in the NFL, and I was told to expect that too. I mean, he's a great guy. people believe in him, though. He needs to give that one a rest. Because how much money is he getting paid this year? $22.5 million a year, something like that. I mean, he's right up at the top, and he's worth every penny of it. So, Buck, and I wouldn't be surprised if he winds up getting some snaps at defensive end as well. One thing we just talked about, the Titans and the stunts that they like to do. Matt Eberflus from the Colts, their defensive coordinator, he's a big proponent of that as well, especially when they get to two deep zone coverages. He likes to stunt, and he'll actually do it on running downs, first and second down. So if you play defensive tackle for him, you're going to get some defensive end type pass rush responsibilities and vice versa. His front four is pretty interchangeable once the ball is snapped. So Buckner will be an asset there because Buckner he's great at everything and he's suited to do whatever you ask. But I think he's especially good on those designer pass rushes, and he'll make the guys around him better. And Kamoko Turi, who was, I believe, missed a significant amount of time last season. Let me confirm that. I want to say he missed several games.
He missed most of last year.
When he was looking very good before he went out, I'm saying, how many games did he miss? Looks like all but 10 or all but four, I mean. So he missed 12 games. So those four games he had, there's some upside there. I could see him being a little bit of a breakout guy. They do need their other, you know, they've drafted Tyquan Lewis and Ben Banagu in the second round the last couple years. They're obviously expecting those guys to take a step forward. It's not an overwhelming pass rush, but when you have these young guys, plus the fact of DeForest Buckner coming aboard and it's well schemed, I think there's a chance for it to get 10% better here, 15% there, and kind of just build up, and all of a sudden you're looking at at least a top 12 pass rush.
What do you make of the back end of that unit? Xavier Rhodes in, Kenny Moore back in the lineup here, Rock Ya-Sin. I don't know, Ya-Sin probably just stays outside strictly this year if Moore is back.
Oh, absolutely, because Kenny Moore is probably the best slot corner in the NFL, and their scheme is different when he's out of the line. We saw that last season. They can't do everything they want to do if Moore's not in there. When Moore is in there, they're much more than just a zone-based defense. So they'll rush more as a blitzer a lot because he's phenomenal at that. They'll go with some fire zone concepts where there's a little bit of a match-oriented nature to some of the zone coverages. They rotate a lot. Their linebackers are extremely well coached. They play very fast, and that gives them some freedom there. And more as a slot corner is basically, in this scheme, is an extension of the linebacking unit. So there are different – Kenny Moore, in fact, the more you think about it, I think he's their most important player on defense, even though Darius Leonard is probably their most dynamic or their best player. Kenny Moore is a huge part of what they do, and if he's in there, that secondary has a chance to be just fine. If he's not in there, you do have some questions. Justin, I think, is in the right direction, but Xavier Rhodes is coming off a very bad season. TJ Carey has always been kind of a number three, number four type guy, and it looks like that's what he is. So he's someone who needs good players around him. And then there's questions about safety Malik Hooker, which is why they didn't give him the fifth-year option pickup. So it's not a very deep secondary either. At least not a lot of proven guys so far. Oh, I do see it's at the bottom of the depth chart. He won't be in the season start. So they have Tavon Wilson. I didn't know that. Or at least I'd forgotten it.
There you go. Yeah,
Tavon Wilson from the most recently of the Detroit Lions, a versatile guy, and they like to play dime there, even though their linebackers are very good and very fast. Eberflus will put dime personnel on the field a lot. So one linebacker, six defensive backs. And the fact that they got Tavon Wilson when they're also bringing George Odom back, and Odom was their dime linebacker a year ago, that leads me to believe they're going to play more dime this season.
All right. Offensively, Phillip Rivers in. We know the offensive line is a lot better than what Rivers played behind in, I almost called it San Diego, in Los Angeles and in San Diego. But I guess even more optimistically here for this offense, I mean, by the second half of the year, their receiving core was completely just decimated. You know, T.Y. Hilton, really one of the last meaningful games we saw him in, he was injured and drop prone in that Thursday night game in Houston. He's back. Michael Pittman gives them a big target opposite Hilton. Paris Campbell, who a bit of a gadget guy coming out of Ohio State, we'll see if they get more out of him. But It's a really strong supporting cast for Phillip Rivers now, and I guess it just becomes a question of, I don't know, when you look at Rivers in this offense, is he more of a cog at this point? I mean, how much do you have to really rely on Phillip Rivers to pull some plays out?
I don't think you want to be relying on him to do that at this point in his career. I do think he is someone who needs a clean pocket now. His pocket mobility, they felt in Los Angeles, I imagine, that his pocket mobility was not what it used to be. It used to be tremendous. But he has not been as consistent making throws with bodies around him. And in the last few years, because of that O-line in L.A., he has had to make a lot of throws with bodies around him. And his interceptions, charting his interceptions and his dropped interceptions last year, I know 24 of his 30 interceptable balls, the pass rush was some kind of factor on 20. That's a huge number. 5 out of 6 interceptable balls. Is that where that is? 5 out of 6? 24 out of 30? Almost.
That's 4 out of 5.
Correct. Yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Which almost 5 out of 6 too. I was not wrong. I just, but the pass rush factored in on a lot of his negative plays. I don't think it's going to be as big of an issue here because he's playing behind an elite offensive line. Braden Smith at right tackle can be better than he has been. Although he's still an above average right tackle. Mm-hmm. It's probably the best O line in the NFL. I would say. Would you agree with that? I think it's the best run blocking line in the NFL.
Definitely best run blocking line. I think I'd put them in the conversation for best all around line.
Dallas would be maybe up there and ahead of them.
Yeah, we'll see what Dallas is. No Travis Frederick. Not that Travis Frederick was all the way back last season, but some question marks in Dallas.
Yeah, and then the Raiders would maybe be in that conversation. And Pittsburgh, if their guys play better, Pittsburgh's not as strong on the edges anymore.
Yeah.
It's a very good offensive line, however you slice it. And Quentin Nelson, not that we're talking about the run, you didn't ask about their run blocking or any of that, but Quentin Nelson's the only lineman in the NFL I see now and maybe have ever seen. I remember Larry Allen when I was a kid, but I didn't study football. I was just watching it. Nelson's the only guy I've seen who's deployed as a weapon. There are times you can tell they call run plays with the idea of not getting so-and-so the ball, but getting Nelson out in front on the move as an active, aggressive run blocker. I've never seen a team call plays for an offensive lineman, essentially. That's what they do at times with Nelson. It's a great offensive line. I think Rivers has a chance to look like a different QB because of that.
All right, let's go to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are also a team in the AFC South. Defensively, look, it's still Todd Walsh. I know everyone's been sort of waiting for a coaching staff change here. It's the same staff. Todd Walsh still run the defense here. Lots of change over here. We will, for the sake of this conversation, take Yannick Ngakoue out of the calculation here. He has said he wants out. He just changed his agent. I don't know if that actually changes anything with him. He has said repeatedly that he doesn't want to play in Jacksonville, though. They have Josh Allen. They drafted Kelavon Chaisson, and I don't know. It looks like it's pretty much the same thing that they had built before, just with younger and maybe, well, quite obviously less proven guys in it. But it seems like still just the same style of defense, same style of defender throughout.
I agree with you. It does. It just, they've swapped in cheaper versions, hoping that those guys will be as good, and maybe they will. It's a first-round pick at corner in C.J. Henderson. I guess they're hoping he can be Bouye and Jalen Ramsey somehow. And then Kelavon Chaisson's a first-round pick, and the plan, I imagine, is for him to be the next Yannick Ngakoue whenever that fully comes to fruition. Josh Allen was excellent as a defensive end last year for him, and I think he'll take a step up. So they've got the pieces to play how they want to play. They've added some D-line depth like they always do. Rodney Gunter's there now. Davin Hamilton, third-round pick. They're assuming Taven Bryan will be better. He needs to – it's time. He's got to look like the former first-rounder, recent first-rounder that he was. That's the formula, and they're going to line up and play their cover three stuff. I will say this, though. They're a cover three defense, no doubt about that. they'll bring some early down pressure. They're a little more diverse on early downs than other cover three defenses. And I know last year they led the league in first and second down sacks that came off of designer pressure. So in other words, they blitzed and got sacks more than any other team in the NFL last year on first and second down. And that is, I would not have guessed that before looking into that, that Jacksonville would have been that team. So they're a little more diverse than you'd guess on early downs, but overall, they want to line up and play fast. They're going to be simple instead of complicated more often than not. And that's why they have all these first-round talents. You need talent and speed in order to play that way.
Offensive side of the ball, I'll just ask this. And look, I think we're both going to project this team for the bottom of this division. They might have a chance to bring in a new quarterback via draft next year. But I guess my question is, what's your gut feeling? Do you think Gardner Minshew can establish himself as their quarterback of the future at this point?
I understand why they're taking a look at it. And if I were the one calling the shots in Jacksonville, I'd probably be taking a look at it as well. So I'm fine with the decision to give Minshew another year, maybe beyond. I think he's a poor man's Russell Wilson stylistically at this point. So then the question becomes, is that good enough in and of itself? And I think the answer to that is no. He needs to be a little bit better than he was last year for this team to be a perennial contender. He was a rookie last year, so we can assume he will be a little better. How does he get better, though? Is he good enough on these unstructured plays to rely on that to the degree that Wilson relies on that? We don't know the answer to that yet. If we had to guess, the answer is no, because I don't know if I can think of another quarterback that is good enough to play that way and truly be consistent with it the way Wilson is mostly consistent with it. So then the question is, all right, well, can Minshew become an on-schedule QB in that sense, and what kind of scheme do we have to run to make that happen? And now we're talking about how you design your running game, what's the foundation of your offense, and they did just make a change at coordinator. They brought in Jay Gruden. Gruden has run a pretty traditional drop-back game anymore. It's the Sean McVay type stuff, kind of the Kyle Shanahan type of stuff, play action, zone blocking, really good job with route combinations built off of that, but that's only as good as the quarterback is in terms of getting the ball out on schedule, and that means dropping back and pulling the trigger from within the pocket. Minshew does that. Can he do that as a foundation, snap in and snap out? Because I imagine that's the way Gruden's probably a crafty enough offensive coordinator to expand what he does a little bit to accommodate Minshew's mobility. But Jacksonville would not hire Gruden if that's truly the way they were set up to play. They'd find someone else who does that as more of their foundation. Gruden is great designing on-schedule passing plays. Ultimately, that's what they're going to need Minshew to be. And I don't know if he can do that or not. They're going to try to find out this year.
All right, let's go to the projections. Order of finish,
you know,
Andy.
Sometimes I give these answers and you go, all right, almost like I've come at you aggressively and you're just, you're backing down even though I didn't know we were challenging one another here.
It's a lot to chew on with Gardner Minshew. I'll say that. How's that? Yeah.
That's basically what I just said, only efficiently. You said it efficiently. I said it in as many words as possible. That's why you're the editor, and I've always just been a writer.
Yeah, I don't think I really said much of anything, though. I think listeners would be quite disappointed if that was the extent of the Gardner Minshew breakdown.
Well, that's the trick. You see, you have to trick them by, instead of saying nothing, you say everything, like I just did, and then it basically has the same effect in the end.
Yeah.
Nobody knows anything more about Gardner Minshew now than they did a second ago, right?
You know what I like to say, Andy? It's all a rich tapestry.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, to each his own, right? To each his own. That's how the cookie crumbles. Other cliches.
Let's go on to the projections. Who are you picking for fourth place in this division?
I will project Jacksonville to be number four.
I will also project Jacksonville at number four. What do you do with the top three? Order the top three for me. Project the top three for me.
I would project as Indianapolis 1, Tennessee 2, and Houston 3.
I'm the same way. Yeah, I think the Colts are, look, it's Chiefs and Ravens at the top of the AFC. I think the Colts are 3. I think you could make an argument for Buffalo, and I would be very proud of you if you did, but I think the Colts are, and it seems like a lifetime ago, but remember the Colts went into Kansas City on Sunday night and just hammered the Chiefs, just dominated that game?
Yeah, I do remember that. It was an outstanding performance. They had some backups in that night, and they still got it done. They played a lot of man coverage at night. Not yeah. like them.
Yeah. Legitimate Super Bowl contender. See, I would when we did the projections predictions for the SI preview issue, we did put Tennessee in the playoffs. We did not put Houston in the playoffs. I think Titans are Super Bowl dark horse. I think the Texans are Super Bowl dark horse. I think, you know, will it be a Deshaun Watson's already great, but you know, you think to like Matthew Stafford and Matthew Stafford post Calvin Johnson in Detroit and how it sort of made him a little bit better being more of a distributor there. I maybe Watson has that sort of rise in Houston now. Maybe he yeah. takes the next step and he's an MVP this year.
That's an interesting point. And I would wonder going along that, because obviously Watson's the most important guy in the franchise and they know that. And so what they're doing is they're building around Watson, and every decision they make, especially offensively, is going to tie back to Watson somehow. You wonder if maybe that factored into the Hopkins thing as well. There were times last year, it was obvious that Watson was looking for Hopkins when he dropped back, no matter what. No matter what, because there was nobody in the league who drew more dedicated double teams than Hopkins. And that's partly because of Hopkins, largely because of Hopkins, but that's partly because defenses study film too, and they see that there are times Watson drops back and only looks for Hopkins. So where are we going to put our guys? Who are we going to try to cover? Maybe they felt we need to expand Watson and break the habit, and then right now he uses Hopkins as too much of a crutch, and he's capable of being more of a distributor than that.
Well, I would, I think we both agree if there is an MVP coming out of this division, Deshaun Watson is probably the guy. I think even if Indianapolis or Tennessee does win the division and or become like an 11 or 12 win team, I don't know if the quarterbacks there are going to carry the day.
They probably won't get credit for it. If Rivers does well, here's what happens, I think. Every week I say, I'm not going to say voter tendencies. Here, I got a new voter tendency conspiracy for you. The hardest vote to figure out sometimes, a lot of times, is comeback player of the year. And I think if Rivers has a great season, he'll be an easy comeback player of the year. I think people will think of him like that before they think of him as an MVP.
I think that's a great point. I think that's a great conspiracy, and I think it's true. It's not a conspiracy. It's a fact.
So Rivers would have to really just blow the lid off the league to get MVP, because he's going to be viewed as a comeback player. Tannehill, no matter what, I mean, he's not going to be able to play much better than he did a year ago. What he did a year ago was borderline A-plus performance. If he does it over 16 or 17 games, 17 weeks, but 16 games – will Arthur Smith get all the credit, or you know, will people say it's Derrick Henry or it's Arthur Smith? What about Derrick Henry as an MVP candidate, by the way?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the quarterbacks would have to falter across the league for Derrick Henry to be in the conversation, but that's doable. If there's like a Mahomes injury and a Lamar Jackson injury, then it opens everything up.
All right.
Is that okay?
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm fine okay. with that. All by right. the way, out of these... the last, since 2010, how many times would you guess that the winner of the AFC South won two games, or 12 games, I mean? Or let's even say this, how many times since 2010 would you say that the winner of the AFC South had a bye week in the playoffs?
Had a bye week. Wow.
Answer both. Just go ahead and answer both. They're similar enough.
I don't think that's... I'm going through. I think the Titans had one in there, though I might be thinking too far back. I don't think the Texans have ever had a bye week. Colts.
When did the Titans have their bye week?
No, Colts did. Colts did, right? At least one with Luck.
Since 2010?
Yeah.
The Colts have... No, they did not.
Really? When they went to the AFC title game?
Wait a minute. Yeah, hold on. Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, no, they didn't.
Wow, that was
the
year really?
That's the year they beat Kansas City in that incredible comeback.
Yep. Okay. That's fair.
No, you know what? I'm off by a year. What is it, 2013 or 14 where they did that?
Lost to the Patriots in the divisional round.
I'm mistaken. The next year they lost to the Patriots and the championship. They got their butts handed to them. The year before they'd also lost to the Patriots, but that was in the divisional round.
Right.
Both of those years, Indianapolis.
Those were wild card years, huh?
Indianapolis played the Bengals in the wild card round.
Okay. I'm going to say Titans, no, because you'd have to go back to Kerry Collins and Jeff Fisher. I'm going to say, well, you just told me Colts, no, so I will, because I'm a good listener, I will say Colts, no. I'll say Jaguars, no, and I will say Texans, no, so I'll say nobody.
And you would be correct.
Yeah?
They have not had a bye week since the 2009 Colts, who went to the Super Bowl.
Wow.
14-2. And so since that time, in the last, since 2010, they have had, I'll just answer this one for you. They have only one team has won 12 games as a division winner. Then it was 10-6, Texans. 10-6 Texans in 2012.
Yeah. Yep.
Then 10-6, a bunch of 10-6 and 11-5s. And last year, 10-6 for Houston got it done. 11-5 for Houston the year before that. And then it was 9-7, 9-7, 10-6. Here's the other thing. Bill O'Brien has, for whatever reason, become the whipping boy. We know whatever reason. People don't agree with some of the trades they've made, but he's become the whipping boy on social media. What other coach would ever win 4 out of 5 division titles in the 5-year span and be the whipping boy?
No, I've said that. Bill O'Brien can coach my team any day. Again, look... moving on from DeAndre Hopkins might end up proving to be the right move and you know, bringing in Laremy Tunsil. He just, you know what it is? He's an inefficient general manager. I'll say that. His trades are inefficient. He doesn't seem to get good market price, whether he's buying or selling. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I would imagine that head coaches who have had the GM responsibilities, we'd have to put Belichick aside because he has to be aside for everything because he's just his own accomplishments. But I would imagine that's not atypical. I would imagine a head coach is more inclined to overpay for a short-term reward than a GM would be.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
The coach has to deal with these weaknesses every week. A GM has to deal with the weaknesses every month to every season.
It's to me, like the Laremy Tunsil trade is a perfect example. You look at it and you say, boy, he gave up so much for Tunsil. That's too much to pay for Tunsil. But for how many years did we say, man, this offensive line, no good. They got to get better in front of Deshaun Watson. Well, that's how they did it. They did overpay. Yes, it was not an efficient deal, but it did. It worked. They're better off for it at this point.
Tunsil has played well. I think you can say that. It's hard to know if it worked or not because it's just hard to grade. People will say, well, that the pick that they traded for Tunsil turned into Joe Blow for 5 Pro Bowls and over. You know, that's not how that goes. We don't know what the pick would have become. But I hear you. And I'm not saying Bill O'Brien's a world beater. I just think that it gets forgotten. They've won the division 4 out of 5 years. And by the way, Deshaun Watson was not there those first couple. They won it 9-7. I get that. It was not like they were a powerhouse. You're still winning your division, which is the first goal on everybody's list. And he's done it 4 out of 5 years and only had a quarterback available to him for essentially 2 of those years, last year and the year before that.
He won the division with Brian Hoyer, and he won the division with Brock Osweiler, which, I mean, those were not those are not his decisions as GM at that point. But I mean, that I don't know, that counts on your resume. I know everyone says 9-7 bad division, but you know, he went above 500 with Hoyer and Osweiler back to back years, which says something about a coach.
Yep.
Defensive player of the year, DeForest Buckner.
You don't think it's J.J. Watt?
No, no, no. Who do you like more? I wonder if Watt can stay out there for 16 games at this point.
Yeah, I do too, and you hope he can, because Watt still looks like Watt. Maybe not as often as he used to but certainly more than most. I mean, he's still an A class player right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how. I mean, he has there's been something of a fall off because he was arguably, the greatest defensive player of all time for a stretch there, and he's not quite that anymore. But and that's another thing that works against him. It's the Aaron Donald argument. He's worse than he used to be. So how can he be the best defensive player in the league?
Yep. I don't know if any of these guys will garner defensive MVP type recognition, but. We need to talk about Tennessee's secondary if we're going to be previewing this division, because we talked about that pass rush, but the secondary is really what defines this defense. And the interchangeability and the way they get to their disguised coverages and what Kenny Vaccaro means to them as a pass rusher and at times a matchup defender on backs and occasionally tight ends, mostly backs, that's a huge piece. Kevin Byard matching up the tight ends, being a rover, a middle field player, half splits, field safety type guy. He is tremendous. Their safeties are outstanding. Their corners can play at a high level. I'm also, and I you probably know this because I bet I've mentioned it, but I'm just flabbergasted that Logan Ryan's not on a roster somewhere, and I think they're going to miss him this year.
Yeah, that was going to be the secret part of this preview, is I did want to ask about Logan Ryan because we don't have at least as of now, we don't have a place to talk about Logan Ryan in the series. But what did you think of the fact that, I guess his agent sent something around to teams pitching Ryan as a safety at this point?
I can't believe it's come to that. I don't know what has got, if maybe their asking price was high out of the gates and they missed their window. I can't imagine the league has just sat on its hands and not paid attention. Logan Ryan should not have to advertise himself. And he's right that he could be a safety. He'd be a fine safety. He did play a lot of that stuff in Tennessee. That's not where he lined up, but Tennessee does so many coverage rotations that Ryan would often end up after the snap at the safety position, and he would rotate out of the slot a lot of times to do that, or he'd blitz out of the slot, which is how the Titans also use their safeties. So he's not just making that up. He has played safety effectively, and he's done it in the most diverse coverage scheme maybe in the entire NFL. He can absolutely do that, and he's still a great slot corner too. I don't know why he's not signed. He doesn't run as well as he used to, probably. That's okay. There weren't five corners in the league that made more plays and matchup coverage out of the slot last year than Logan Ryan. There just weren't. The Jets had interest in him, and I can't imagine why they wouldn't want him, because the Jets next to Tennessee do those split safety big coverage rotation disguises out of zone. They do that more than anybody but the Titans, and they need help at defensive back. Brian Poole's fine, but Logan Ryan would be an upgrade for him. I can't believe Logan Ryan's not on a roster somewhere.
I'm with you. Well, maybe we'll have a chance to talk about him again. We're running out of divisions. I guess that's what's really working against us at this point. But
we'll talk about him again when some team needs a corner in November and signs him, and he becomes their third best player as they go to the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, Andy. This was a good one. You earned yourself a Yasso Pop and a chance to cool out here.
I don't think people heard the Yasso conversation, so they don't know what you're talking about.
We're giving
them free advertising now. Why would we do that?
That's for that's for the after hours crowd.
Yeah. Yeah.
All
healthy
right.
Desserts. Healthy desserts are the best.
Yeah, Andy. That's it. We do. We're running out. I don't even know what divisions are left here. Not many.
Someone can write in and tell us which ones we haven't done, then, I guess.
That's a terrible trivia question, but do it anyway. Andy, right. We'll do it again next week. We'll call it just goodbye for now.
Okay, thanks.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is me, Gary Gramling. Thanks once again to Andy Benoit for joining me for this one. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.